Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be back.
Today, our mission is pretty razor-focused.
Yeah.
We are tackling what might be the latest and honestly most sophisticated threat targeting software developers.
It's a big one.
We're diving deep into the evolution of a malware called Glasswarm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels like cybersecurity threats are fundamentally shifting their targets. It's not just about consumer PCs anymore.
Not at all. We saw the shift to enterprise servers, but now the real target is the supply chain itself.
And the gateway to that supply chain is your developer workstation.
That's absolutely correct. And Glasswarm is so concerning because it specifically targets the tools developers use every single day.
We're talking high-value assets.
Exactly.
Got it.
We've been tracking this since about October, and its specialty is, well, it's compromising developer credentials and more cryptocurrency wallets.
So if you're a developer using something like Visual Studio Code, you really need to listen to this.
You do, because they are exploiting the trust you have in the whole extension ecosystem. That's their front door.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Let's start with what feels like the biggest shockwave here, which is the major strategic pivot in this latest attack wave. The fourth one.
Right.
Before this, Glasswarm was exclusively, almost religiously, a Windows-focused malware.
And now it's hunting on Macs.
Which is a huge change.
The move to macOS is the single biggest sign that this threat actor has matured. They've updated their whole business model.
They didn't just stumble on Mac users.
Oh, no. This is a very clear, very strategic decision, and it's based on market reality.
What's the market reality there?
Two things, really. First is just the undeniable popularity of Apple computers among professional developers.
Especially in high-value sectors, right?
Yeah.
Like Web3 or Enterprise SaaS.
Exactly. So attacking Macs means you're hitting a richer, more important target.
And the second thing?
The second thing is a bit cynical, but it's this. This perception that Mac users can be a little less vigilant about security.
The old Macs don't get viruses idea.
That's the one. It creates this environment where a malicious extension might not get scrutinized as much as it would on a Windows machine. They're banking on that complacency.
So to make this pivot happen, they couldn't just reuse their old tools.
No, they had to essentially rebuild the entire operational framework.
A complete overhaul.
From the ground up. This was not a simple port. All the Windows-specific tricks, PowerShell, messing with the registry, all of that had to go.
So what did they use instead?
They embraced native Mac mechanisms. For execution, they're leveraging AppleScript, which is a powerful scripting language built right into the OS.
And for persistence, how does it stay on the machine?
That's the really clever part. They're using launch agents.
Okay, so for anyone who isn't deep in macOS internals, what are launch agents? Why is that such a smart choice for an attacker?
So launch agents are basically the system's official way to schedule background tasks.
Like when you log in?
Right. They make sure certain processes run automatically when a user logs in or even after a restart. If an attacker can get their malware set up as a launch agent, it just runs every single time the Mac boots up.
It becomes part of the system.
It becomes a persistent native resident. And that makes it incredibly hard to find unless you know exactly what you're looking for.
Wow. That shows a really deep native understanding of how macOS works.
It does. They've done their homework.
So, okay, the tool is built. Now, how do they sneak it past the gates? What does that infection chain actually look like?
It's a classic exploitation of trust, really. The payload is distributed through malicious extensions on the OpenVSX registry.
And OpenVSX, that's a third-party marketplace for VS Code extensions, right?
It is. So developers trust it, and researchers found three specific extensions being used, all pretending to be useful themes or tools.
And they're built to be evasive.
Highly evasive. First, the malicious part is just hidden inside compiled JavaScript, so it's hard to spot with a manual review.
But the real defense is the encryption.
The real defense is the encryption, yeah. The actual payload is encrypted with AES-256-CBC.
Which means security scanners can't see it.
Exactly. A scanner looks at this blob of encrypted data and says, I don't know what this is, so I'll let it pass. It's invisible.
Then we get to the timing mechanism, which I found just fascinating. It installs, it gets past the scans, but it doesn't fire right away.
No, it waits.
How long?
For 15 minutes. And that 15-minute delay is, frankly, a brilliant piece of malicious design.
Why 15 minutes? What's so special about that number?
It tells you they know the security industry's playbook. Most automated security systems, these sandboxes, they only run a new program for a limited time.
Like 5 or 10 minutes?
Right. If they don't see any malicious behavior in that window, the sandbox gives it the all clear.
So by waiting 15 minutes?
They're waiting 15 minutes. They make sure they're already outside that monitored environment. They wait until they're on your real machine before they wake up.
That is just audacious. So once it's awake, how does it phone home? The command and control is pretty unconventional, too.
It is, and it's consistent across all the Glassroom campaigns. They use the Solana blockchain for C2.
A public blockchain? That seems like overkill.
It's not overkill. It's an operational guarantee. By embedding their commands and the transaction data on a decentralized ledger like Solana, they get two things.
Anonymity.
Massive anonymity and incredible resilience. You can't just take down a C2 network that isn't on a physical server.
You can't just sinkhole a domain name.
Exactly. You can't sinkhole a blockchain address. It makes them incredibly hard to stop.
Okay, let's turn to the damage report on this. Because the scope of what they're stealing has really expanded with this macOS version.
It has. This is probably the most alarming part for the developer community.
They cast a very wide net, it seems.
A huge net. On the crypto side, it now targets over 50 different browser-based crypto extensions.
50.
50. It's designed to steal wallet data, seed phrases, basically drain digital assets from any developer touching Web3 tools.
That's immediate financial pain. But the credential theft is maybe even more far-reaching.
I think so, especially with the supply chain risk. The focus is still on high-leverage credentials.
GitHub passwords, NPM tokens.
Right, and OpenVSX credentials. And stealing an NPM token, that's not just stealing a password, it's like stealing a master key.
Because then you can inject malicious code into their legitimate software packages.
And infect every single downstream user. It's a potential supply chain catastrophe.
And the move to Mac adds that one really nasty layer, accessing the macOS keychain.
That's the crown jewel for any Mac attack. The keychain holds the keys to everything. Corporate VPN credentials, email access tokens, cloud service keys.
So getting into that turns a single infected laptop into a beachhead for a much larger breach.
A massive beachhead, yeah. But if there's one feature that really makes me pause, it's the goal of hardware wallet trojanization.
This is genuinely terrifying.
It's their ultimate statement of intent. The malware actively searches for hardware wallet software like Ledger Live and Trezor Suite.
And the goal is what? To replace them.
The goal is to replace the legitimate applications with trojanized counterfeit versions.
So you're trying to compromise the software that manages your most secure, most offline asset.
Exactly. You intercept transactions, you steal private keys, you trick the user into approving a malicious transfer. It completely shatters the trust model of hardware security.
But the research has said this isn't fully working yet.
And that's a crucial caveat we have to stress. Right now, this trojanization mechanism is not fully operational. The replacement wallets it downloads are just empty files.
But the framework is there.
The framework is fully built. The code is there to search, download, and replace. It's a time bomb, waiting to be activated. The fact that they built it at all shows you just how ambitious they are.
So we've got a huge problem spreading through these marketplaces. The malicious extensions had over 33,000 reported downloads.
Right, but the researchers did caution those numbers are likely inflated.
So the attackers are juicing their own download stats.
It looks that way. It's a social engineering trick. Make an extension look popular, developers will trust it.
But that makes it harder to know the real scope of the infection.
It does. But even if the real number is a tiny fraction of 33,000, the targets are so high value that the risk is just astronomical.
So for you, the listener, if you're a dev on macOS, and you've installed some new VS Code extensions lately, we need to talk about immediate steps.
Triage is critical right now.
What's the very first thing you need to do?
First and simplest, remove any suspicious or unfamiliar extensions immediately. If the publisher looks weird or it seems too good to be true, just uninstall it.
Then the credential audit.
Then the credential audit. You have to change all potentially compromised credentials. And this isn't just changing your GitHub password.
You mean the tokens?
You have to revoke and regenerate your API tokens, especially NPM tokens. Changing your password won't invalidate a stolen token. You have to rotate them.
And for the crypto users, what's the advice?
Extreme caution. You have to transfer all your digital assets to brand new wallets, new seed phrases, everything.
And the hardware wallets.
Here's the hard truth. If you used Ledger Live or Trezor Suite on that Mac, you have to consider that device potentially exposed. You may need to migrate everything off it after you clean your system.
Which brings us to cleaning the system. You mentioned that clever persistence mechanism.
Yes. You need to do a thorough system scan, but also manually check your macOS launch agents directory for anything unfamiliar.
Where do you find that?
It's in your user's library folder, so library launch agents, look for anything suspicious in there.
But given the level of access this malware gets,
Given that it gets keychain access, a complete system reinstallation, wiping the drive, and starting fresh is probably the safest option, especially if you handle sensitive corporate code.
so what does this all mean, big picture? To me, it highlights that extension marketplaces are now a major attack vector.
They're a well-trodden attack vector. We have to shift our defense mindset.
So, looking long term, defense has to be more than just individual vigilance, right?
It has to become formalized, organizational.
What does that look like in practice for a development team?
It means implementing clear extension policies. Organizations should probably maintain approved lists of extensions that have been vetted.
So you can't just let every developer install any tool they find.
Exactly. It adds a bit of friction, yes, but it dramatically reduces your attack surface.
And for individual developers, what habits should they be cultivating?
Segmentation. Maintaining separate environments for different levels of work.
Can you give an example of that?
Sure. You shouldn't be developing your critical production code in the same environment where you're testing unverified tools.
Or browsing the web.
Or browsing the web. Use virtual machines. Use Docker. Use cloud dev environments to isolate your sensitive work from everything else.
That makes sense. So if Glassworm hits your testing VM, your production keys are still safe.
They're safe in a totally separate, isolated environment. And of course, just basic vigilance.
Right, looking at those inflated download numbers we talked
Yeah,
about.
exactly. Only install extensions from trusted publishers with a real history. Be skeptical of anything that's suddenly popular overnight.
The sources also point to the need for more comprehensive security tools.
They're table stakes now. You need services that provide continuous system audits, 24/7 monitoring for anomalies, not just signatures, and incident response.
And the human element.
And security awareness training. That's no longer optional. It's a necessary defense against both the technical and the social engineering side of these attacks.
So this threat really proves one thing, doesn't it?
It proves attackers are adaptable, they're sophisticated, and they see the developer's workstation, whether it's Windows or the supposed fortress of macOS, as the ultimate gateway.
And that's the core takeaway for you, the learner. Gaining knowledge quickly about threats like this is essential for survival. The most secure environment is one that's constantly questioned.
Indeed. And it leaves us with this final, maybe provocative thought.
Go on.
If the application designed to secure your most offline asset, the software for your hardware wallet, if that's the vulnerability being targeted, what does that imply about the trust we place in all the other software we install every day?
What other unthinkable vulnerabilities are being tested right now?
Exactly. Something to mull over as you audit your system.
That's it for this deep dive. Stay safe out there.